dads are doing it for themselves. But there have been some pretty shitty ones down throughout the annals of history. Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform it is you listen to your podcasts. This week gone, it was, of course, Father's Day, and hopefully many of you had good fun over the weekend celebrating the men in your life, or were celebrated if you are a father worth celebrating. But I wanted to flip that on its head in this particular episode for two reasons. One, many people have shite dads. We might not ever say that, might not feel like you're allowed to say that, but they exist and you should acknowledge that. And maybe that's why you sometimes get these opt-out emails from different companies from, you know, someplace you bought a pair of tracksuit bottoms from one time. They're like, would you like to be, you know, put in a safe space and excluded from our Father's Day promotional material? And the shite dads do just exist. We need to acknowledge that. The ones in this episode are more shite than most, I think we'd have to say. And on the other hand, many dads, and many modern dads in particular, worry a huge amount that they aren't doing enough, or aren't doing it right, or generally could be doing it more. Are we getting this whole parenting thing down? So I kind of wanted to just bask in the glow of we are not the worst out there. And actually what you're doing by historical standards, you know, it's pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. And maybe I appreciate this a bit more this year, as it is my first Father's Day as a father. And there is an awful lot of pressure on those modern dads to be the all singing, all dancing provider and positive presence in their progeny's lives. And that's great and 100% as it should be. But to take the pressure off today, we are focusing on some of the worst dads in history to show, you know, really listening fathers of the audience, you're doing a pretty good job. And then we'll end on a note of positivity and a pretty amazing take on fatherhood and what you should aim to be. First, though, let's start with the shits. Now, you would have to obviously read into the monikers that historical figures assume. Alexander the Great, for example. That's a pretty good name to be remembered by, and we will get in to him. Like, if you're going to pick what moniker you wanted to be remembered for, you know, you'd pick Sean the Strong, or the Just, or the Tall. Enter Ivan the Terrible. And no, it's not Ivan Yates. This was Ivan, a ruler of Russia. And actually, the translation of the terrible, when you take in the Russian, it doesn't really mean terrible as in awful. It's more meant to be like the terrible, the feared, the mighty, the awe-inspiring. That might be a better translation. But he does seem to have been pretty awful too. And famously, he assaulted a pregnant daughter-in-law of his, beating her pretty, you know, pardon the pun, terribly. And as a result, was confronted by his own son, his heir, another Ivan. They had a row, it turned violent, and Ivan II became Ivan the Dead. His dear old dad hit him in the head with a cudgel or stick, depending on the version of the story. And while devastated, he couldn't exactly put that genie back in the bottle. Ivan the Terrible Dad. Now, Alexander the Great, on the other hand, well, you would think that maybe he turned out so great, in part because of a dear doting dad, right? Well, it is more complicated than that. His dad was Philip of Macedon, in that he was Alexander of Macedon before all the great stuff came along. And really, Philip did an awful lot of the groundwork for Alexander. He pulled the empire together, he subjugated nearby countries, and built the most effective army of its day. He had all this built up with an eye on conquering Persia and further afield before he died. And this is basically, I mean, the equivalent of Alexander inheriting a Rolls Royce of an army. He was a Nepo baby, I suppose we would call him today, that he had this handed to him on a plate. Still had to go out and conquer half the world, all right, but he did that using, you know, tanks versus bows and arrows, if that's not too much overstating it. But his dad, Philip, well, you see, he was a bit of a polygamist. He had seven marriages, all of which raised questions about the succession and who was going to take over. Would it be Alexander? Would it be somebody else? His final bride was called Cleopatra. Not that Cleopatra, a different one. And gave birth to a daughter just before Philip died. Or some actually think was murdered. And there were plenty of questions raised about Alexander's parentage at the royal court, which led ultimately at a feast to a drunken brawl just before Philip died, and to Alexander and his mother fleeing the palace at the time. So it's unclear just how much Philip loved dear son, the great one to come, And there are more than a few sources who think it was actually Alexander and his mother who did away with Philip in order to secure the throne from himself. So on one hand, inherits this fantastic thing. I suppose it's like inheriting a Fortune 500 company, but your dad was a bit mean to you or wasn't around all that much or was having affairs all the time. Not exactly the peak of positive father-son relationships. Another questionable father, this time a little bit closer to home, and another who was fond of having many wives. Seems to be a bit of a historical reoccurrence, wouldn't you say? You've probably guessed it's Henry VIII. Six wives of not great fates, it had to be said, and there's a famous rhyme indeed for that. Divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. He, like many monarchs at the time, wanted and demanded indeed a male heir. And the hunt for this and the demand for a divorce of wives who couldn't, in his view, give him that, led to him breaking with the Roman Catholic Church. And you, like, here we're kind of thinking of the consequences for the children involved. So Mary, his mother, Catherine of Aragon, cast aside the, you know, the first divorce or annulment, as it were. Elizabeth's mother, Anne Boleyn, beheaded. Not great for child development, beheading the mother, really. You wouldn't find it in many textbooks now. And then, even after that, Edward, the heir, finally born to Jane Seymour, and she died, and he went on to have three more wives again. Beheaded, divorced, and then one who survived him. Lucky her. All three of those children in turn did rule England in a succession after dear old Henry died, but he's hardly going to be winning any Father of the Year awards. Let's move into the 20th century now, and one of the sadder and weirder stories. The Irish Sun summed it up with the headline, "How Marvin Gaye was beaten, starved and abused by cross-dressing preacher dad." This is obviously the soul singer Marvin Gaye of Let's Get It On and It Takes Two fame. His father was a strict Christian preacher belonging to a sect which banned movies, TV and sleeveless dresses, although that didn't stop his own penchant for women's clothing later in life. His wife later said of the four children that they had together, Martin Sr. never liked Marvin Jr. and even claimed that he was illegitimate. He also hated that Marvin was close to his mother, lashing out at the two and beating and starving his son if he couldn't recite back to him Bible verses. His history of extramarital affairs is something he also passed on to Marvin Jr., who was, let's be honest, hardly the role model of a father himself. But then what chance did he have, you might ask? To the point where he actually changed his name to Marvin Gaye with an E, just to break really from the father's spelling, or that was a big part of it anyway. After hitting it big, Marvin bought a mansion for his parents. He still wanted to look after them and moved back in there at one point in an attempt to kick a pretty bad drug habit. But having the two men under one roof was a recipe for disaster. Marvin Gaye intervened in a row between his parents over some missing documents, and things got physical with him punching and hitting his dad and otherwise lashing out. And his mother has reported the situation as saying that his dad left the room very calmly, didn't say a word, went to his bedroom, took out the gun that his son had brought him for Christmas, and then shot Marvin Gaye Jr. twice in the chest. He did 6 years in prison after killing his son a day short of his 45th birthday. The entertainment industry is unfortunately a hive of such stories, with the father of the Jackson 5 also being caught up in abuse allegations. Joe Jackson admitted to what he called switching the children, denying it was beating them, rather teaching them a lesson and to be strong. If they, you know, missed a note or otherwise misbehaved in his eyes, they could be beaten with tree branches, switches and electrical cord. LaToya Jackson also accused him of sexual abuse. Michael Jackson bore the brunt of much of that abuse as the youngest, regularly being mocked about his nose by his father, something which a lot of people think contributed to his later obsession with cosmetic surgeries. However, the other Jackson children have largely played down a lot of these allegations, choosing to remember their father as the successful manager of the Jackson 5, as opposed to the different sides of how siblings maybe see an abusive parent. I feel that this has gotten quite heavy. So let's end the podcast with the positives instead. And I'm sure a lot of you can pick out the positive father figures in your own life, even internationally or in politics or in sport or whatever it is. But here is a famous passage, and it's from Teddy Roosevelt talking about his father and his relationship with him. And I'm just I'm just going to read it, you know, in full, or the section of this from a letter he wrote in 1900 that I think then went into his autobiography. And quote, "I was fortunate enough in having a father whom I've always been able to regard as an ideal man. It sounds a little like I can't say what I'm going to say, but he did combine the strength and courage and will and energy of the strongest man with the tenderest, cleanest and purity of a woman. I was sickly and a timid boy. He not only took great and untiring care of me, some of my earliest remembrances are of nights when he would walk up and down with me for an hour at a time in his arms when I was a wretched mite suffering acutely with my asthma, but he also most wisely refused to coddle me and made me feel that I must force myself to hold my own with other boys and prepare to do the rough work of the world. I cannot say that he ever put it into words, but he certainly gave me the feeling that I was always to be both decent and manly, and that if I were manly, nobody would laugh at me being decent. In all my childhood, he never laid a hand on me but once. But I always knew perfectly well that in that case it became necessary, he would not have the slightest hesitancy in doing so again. And alike from my love and respect, and in a certain sense my fear of him, I would have hated and dreaded beyond measure to have him know that I had been guilty of a lie, or of cruelty, or of bullying, or of uncleanness, or cowardice. Gradually I grew to have the feeling on my own account and not merely on his." End quote. And there's a lot in that. And I'm just going to, I think anything I can add would probably only demean it. But it doesn't feel like something out of the 1900s, does it? It feels like something really you could see quite modern, maybe in some sort of an inspirational Instagram post. But, you know, food for thought. Today, you can be both. You can be a man and you can be kind. And you're doing a lot. You're doing a lot of work. A lot of dads are, maybe don't get the credit. A lot of the work goes to the wife, to the mother. Absolutely no doubt about that. But well done if you are doing that and you're putting in the work, and maybe take a bit of time to thank the people in your life who are putting in that work along with you. That's it for this episode. Sorry to get all philosophical on you. We'll chat to you next week.